Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show. On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Have no place to go. How was your weekend, honey?
Talking to me or Dave?
Oh, both of you. Oh,
fine, thanks, sweetie.
Fine, thanks, baby.
Live from the Polish American Museum on Kazimierz Pulaski Day. We're celebrating a bunch of different things here that we'll get into shortly, but we'll also get into the top six. Mike Jacobson back at the plant, pushing the buttons, along with who else is back there?
Krzanich is here, standing by, sir.
Steven, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you? Good morning.
And did you enjoy your weekend?
I did. It was a very nice weekend. Went by a little too fast, but... Yeah, great stuff. What about you?
Just fine, thank you. And Andre Darlis survived the polar plunge, and Dave survived the stair climb.
We did.
We did.
Oops, we did indeed.
Mm-hmm. All right. Oh, wait. We've already made a mistake. I'm being told we've already made an error.
Uh-oh.
Let's go live to fact check. Hold on 1 second, Stephen. Yes, sir. What did I say? Oh, wait. Turn his microphone on, please. His microphone's not on.
I think you're getting corrected on the pronunciation of Kazimierz Pulaski.
Sir, first your name.
Jan Loris.
Help me again. Your name is?
Jan Loris.
Jan Loris.
Since it's kind of early in the morning, you can just yawn and you got my name.
Oh, yawn. Okay. All right, yawn. And the pronunciation was incorrect for Kazimierz?
Kazimierz.
Kazimierz.
Yeah. A lot of people say Kashmir, as if he were the inventor of the sweater, but he's not. So.
Right. Yeah, it's like people that call it Kaminsky Park back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So help me out. Say it for me.
Kazimierz Pulaski.
Kazimierz Pulaski.
There's an RZ at the end. Kazimierz.
Like Kazimierz.
I thought it was pretty good. Kazimierz
Pulaski.
Pulaski.
All right, very nice. All right, how about a hand for it?
All right, very nice.
Whatever happened there with our tongues.
Yakshimash.
That's a workout, seriously.
It is. One of the reasons people say is that he's more popular than the other Polish-American hero is because the other Polish-American hero is Thaddeus Kosciuszko. So, of course, the important thing is Pulaski died for his in the service of his country. So I think that's why we celebrate his...
Well, this is a beautiful building. What's your role here?
I used to be the director, and now I'm the historian.
Can we lean on you for a few things today?
No problem.
I appreciate that very much. Stick around, and your name again is your full name?
Jan Loris.
Mary, run a background check on Jan, if you would.
Uh-huh.
All right, we'll get to the top six. Thank you, Jan. I appreciate it very much. We'll get back to what's happening here at the Polish American Museum in just a second. Before we do any of that, though, the top six at six coming up. I want to find out how
It's also the Polish Museum of America.
What did I say?
Polish American Museum.
All right, that's the
just
end of our show.
Yawn.
That's the end of our show. I'm leaving now. The Polish Museum of America. It's very close to the Polish American Museum. This one's bigger. All right, so let's start with you. How was the water?
Water was absolutely freezing. It made no difference that it was 50 degrees outside the water. I think the biggest show, by the way, Mark Doyle and Kip and everybody from Warrior Games says hello to you, Steve, and Mary, and Dave, and everybody.
I got a text.
And like thank you for all your support.
Listen,
and Brendan, too.
I got a text like at 9:30 in the morning saying we're about to go into the water. Where are you? And I went, hey, I'm sleeping.
Is that Mark
Leave
Doyle or
alone.
Was that Kip?
No, it was Kip.
Because they wanted to make a video for you, and I went, yeah, no, we're freezing. I love Steve, but we're not making a video in 40 below weather.
I was helping others.
Yeah, I know. But, I think they kept saying something about next year, Cochran. I said, no, we'll see about that. It was really cool, kind of bucket listy, but the coldest part were my feet because you have to wear shoes. You have to wear something on your feet, not just socks, and you can't go in barefoot. It's
so the ice water freezes around your
feet. So, the water just pours into your shoes, and there's nowhere for it to go. I mean, it just your feet freeze. That's the coldest part of it.
You don't bring other shoes to switch?
Oh, I did. I absolutely did. But one of the guys, I forget his first name. His last name was Miller. He's a Marine. Big dude. It's funny to watch these, the soldiers go in and, You know, as soon as you hit the water, oh, God, you just scream. And you have to go under. You can't just go into your feet or
and
up to your knees because that's wussy.
And I'm told it feels like lots of little knives pricking you?
It didn't until I submerged. I mean, I went all the way in, and my chest, literally, and my feet were freezing. It was a challenge, but, you know, all for
would
such
you
a
do
great
it again?
Cause. No.
Mm. Once is enough.
Once is enough. We raised a lot of money. We were very happy. The Polar Plunge actually set a record this year.
$1.5 million
for Special Olympics, and then the Warrior Games raised a lot of money as well. So I raised about
$600. How did my friend Mark Doyle do? Did he whine at all?
He was great. He was just in shorts. He was not going to go on. He was just going to go in with shorts, but he ended up putting a T-shirt on. It was cold and it was challenging, but it was exciting and exhilarating.
So, but I don't understand. And, if the air were colder outside, would it have been more miserable? In other words, if it's 30 degrees, would it have been more miserable or less?
It would probably have been about the same.
Okay.
The water temperature was so cold because it was nice outside. And we had this group of, there was a bunch of high school kids. There was a group of Marist High School football players. So they all went in the water ahead of us. And we thought, oh, good, maybe they'll warm it up a little bit. Because there was like 50 guys, young kids. They didn't warm it up for
us. $1.5 million.
$1.5 million.
By the way, for everybody, yeah. And you did very Facebook nice. Post?
I did some Facebook,
for
yeah.
For everybody that sent in boob jokes about how cold you appeared.
Stop it.
No, I'm just telling you right now.
It was cold.
I don't know how many 12-year-olds are out there. You know, you're not the first. You won't be the last. There are certain things that happen in cold water. But I'm going to do my polar plunge in July.
Good. Yeah. That'll be great then.
Yeah, are you going to do it again next year?
I don't think I would.
I don't think I would do it.
I'll watch you guys do it, though, because I think you guys should do it next year.
I've always heard you can have a heart attack doing this.
What I would wonder about. Seriously, you know, like, you know, you ride Space Mountain and the signs going up Space Mountain say if you have a heart condition, you can't ride.
Right.
Are there somebody holding signs saying if you have a heart condition, don't jump in the ice
I
water?
I didn't see any of those signs, no. Mm. But they put you in a holding area. It's just like
was
a big
Dr.
warming
Most
tent.
There prepared to perform CPR?
No, but they had a team standing by. They did with paddles and... And paddles.
Well, we don't want to discourage people from doing this. If you're willing to do this, they'll do it next year. The lake will still be there.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
And it'll be great.
It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun, and happy that we raised a nice amount of money.
$1.5 million. That's one of our items in the top six, which now becomes a top five.
Very cool.
Dave, how was the stair climb?
Stair climb was great, as always. Great event. We had a great turnout from WGN Radio and WGN TV. And
who showed up from TV?
Lourdes was there, Marcus Leshock.
And they did it in their TV clothes? Lourdes was wearing a dress.
Yes, she was.
Heels.
Yes. She was actually took the anchor desk with her up the stairs.
Wow, very good.
Yeah,
very good.
Nice.
Lourdes and Marcus and Nosa Pelsa.
I didn't see Mark.
Not at his age. No. Stuff. So you did all four flights?
Did all four.
How was your time compared to last year?
About 2 minutes faster. Last year was 2 minutes faster than the year before that. So, but
you're like a fine wine that you suck down on the weekends. You're aging well.
Well, but before you applaud this feat, you should know that Kevin Powell finished ahead of me.
Oh.
But that's the newly thin Kevin Powell.
It's the newly thin and younger Kevin Powell.
Yeah, he's 27.
Yes.
He should finish it.
Who actually was posting pictures of himself at Wingfest after the stair climb.
Really?
If Milt Rosenberg came in and finished ahead of you, then I'd wonder.
That would be a problem.
No, Kevin makes total sense.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
The top six at six on 720 WGN.
And we continue live the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour from the Polish Museum of America, presented by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands. It's a top five of the top six since we covered one. Let's go to the items in no particular order here. Trump scored another first this weekend, the first to accuse a former president of spying on him and bugging his home, or technically his home, Trump Tower.
Yeah.
There is no evidence to back up the claim. The White House is asking for an investigation to see if Obama abused the powers. The former director of national intelligence told our friend Chuck Todd yesterday on Meet the Press it didn't happen. He would know if it happened. It didn't happen. Obama's former people said the same thing. There is considerable reason to believe that the president got the information from a combination of Breitbart and Mark Levin, the talk show host. It's a lot of not good, and it'll be one of your big stories today. Next.
Oh, it was like a little clip.
It was a tiny little. It was more crumpling a Post-it note. Republicans are reluctant to investigate the Trump-Russia situation, or have been, but they are pushing forward with it now with a little more haste. However, they are willing to investigate President Obama at this point. And they are going to, they say, they are going to look into whether or not Obama abused power. Next. Trump's weekends at Mar-a-Lago may be killing local business. Local business people are saying they, because of the security and the traffic rerouting, the things that go on in and around West Palm Beach, a lot of businesses are taking it, and it's not a good thing, and they'd like him to take a weekend or two off. Next!
By the way, you hear Ivanka, someone's going to be opening a pizza parlor near Mar-a-Lago as well.
One of the Trumps?
Going back. Yeah, Ivana's ex-husband.
Oh, really? Ivanka.
Yeah.
Just to take advantage of the pub?
Apparently, yeah.
Wow, things going well for him. The IRS says it's going to do less audits than ever because of a lack of agents. So if you're considering cheating on your taxes, I still don't advise it, but it seems like this will be the year. Next.
I thought the same thing yesterday when I saw that story.
And how cool is the Pope? How cool is the Pope? You know what the Pope said yesterday? And this makes total sense. If you would look at your Bible and check your Bible every time you checked your phone, imagine how much more knowledge you would have and how much more spirituality you could consume.
That's right.
You go to the phone, look at the phone. Oh, look at the phone. Messages? Oh, tweets? Oh, look at the phone. Oh, what's on the phone now? How many times do that? You go to your Bible once a week because you're a hobby Christian? Come on. Sign up for the program.
Can you look at your Bible on your phone?
Sure. Okay. Absolutely. There's a million apps.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because, you know, I'm not Catholic, mm-hmm. but I do believe and I go to church almost every Sunday. And yet the Pope made me feel guilty yesterday. That's the power of the Pope. There you go. That's your top five of the top six. We covered the other one earlier, top six at six. And we continue live from the Polish Museum of America, presented by Allstate agent Adam Razny, who will be with us later. All right, so joining us now, speaking of pronunciation issues, this lovely lady is going to tell me her name. Please tell me your name.
Małgorzata.
One more time.
Małgorzata. That's Margaret in Polish.
Could I call you Margaret? Would you mind?
Yeah, I don't mind.
Thank you very much. Margaret, and also, Jan, if you don't mind, I'd like to keep you around, too, if you would, please.
Okay.
So would this be former director, current director? Is that how we describe the two of you?
I prefer historian, which is my current function.
All right, so director and historian. All right. So, Margaret, please tell us a little bit about the building and the artwork that people can see as they walk into this great hall.
The beautiful building is the building of the Polish Roman Catholic Union, the oldest fraternal, and their host, they created Polish Museum 80 years ago. We just celebrated the 80th anniversary on January 12, 1937, we were open. Uh-huh. And not only we host museum, one of the largest collections, but also magnificent library, over 100,000 volumes on the main floor, on the street level, and also wonderful archives. In the archives, we not only have letters of Kościuszko, for example, but also King's letters, marvelous maps. So that's not only the museum, it's archives, library, and museum itself with the collection. Like you mentioned Pope, we're sitting by the Pope Memorabilia St. John Paul II.
JP, yeah.
So it's an amazing place full of wonderful memories for everybody from Polonia and not only.
There's cool pictures, too, from when he came to
yes.
Grant.
Right. Oh,
yeah. Yes. Beautiful.
Yes.
And Jan, in World War II, when the Nazis invaded Poland, what was the effect on what was happening to the Polish community here in Chicago?
Well, the Polish community mobilized itself very quickly once the war broke out. In fact, this Saturday, the Legion of Young Polish Women, which was an organization which was founded to help prisoners of war and the Polish government in exile, held its annual fundraiser, the so-called Bala Marantowe Red and White Ball. Mm-hmm. So there's a continuation. Also, an interesting thing is that while the United States was still neutral, about 1,000 Polish Americans joined the Polish Armed Forces. They went to Canada, trained there, and eventually went to England. About 1944, early 44, President Roosevelt asked all the Americans who were either in the Norwegian Army, the Free French Army, the British Army, to come back to the United States Army. Many of the Poles did, but a few did stay on to fight in World War II all the way to the end on the Allied side. Unfortunately, because of Stalin, many of the Polish soldiers who did manage to get out in 1939 and 41 were not able to return to their homeland. So that's how I ended up here, and a whole bunch of people my age. Our parents couldn't go back to Poland.
Yeah, so. And speaking of that, Margaret, did you see an incredible exponential growth of the baby boom generation, post-war baby boom generation, with the Polish community in Chicago because of it?
Well, the Polish community, I would say yes, but, you know, we are always thinking about our membership. That means people who are supporting the Polish Museum of America. And we assume right now, like Mr. Lorish is saying, the biggest group among our membership are the boomers. Yes, Mr. Lorish?
I would say so, yes.
And they support, they come to us, they feel American. So that's obvious for them to become, you know, active in Polish Museum. You will see it today. They will be coming. So that's the wonderful experience.
It seems silly to say because of the tightness that I witness of the Polish community just from afar. But are there people that are in the Polish community that don't make access to this place and don't use it or don't enjoy it?
Well, location, location, location. The Polish community is moving out into the suburbs, or it has for many, many years. So actually we do have Polish Saturday schools coming here, but the big expense for them is to rent the buses to come here from areas.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
yes,
but we still... Go ahead.
What we are trying to enforce right now, it's to come back to the Polish downtown. We have the exhibit about Polish downtown because it was the first Polish location. So we have all of the so-called Polish cathedrals around us.
Come back to the neighborhood.
Absolutely. That's why we have that special special program that we call One Brick a Time for the Polish Museum among the Polish schools. And they are friends. So if they are once here for any program, happy meeting with the author, concert, or something else, they feel that they are at home, and that's our goal. We are the Polish Museum. We're a joint effort.
And again, the beautiful stained glass, the beautiful painting. These paintings look like they could be in the Louvre. They're just magnificent.
Yes, they're outstanding. They're at the top of the Polish painting and painters.
Beautiful. Yeah.
And this is Kazimierz.
Kazimierz, yes. Done in...
Better?
Better. Very good. Kazimierz, this was actually the hook to Chicago history. It was brought over by the Polish community for the 1933 Century of Progress Fair. Mm-hmm. So it was...
And gifted to the museum?
Well, it went around. It was voted the most popular painting at the fair because, of course, the Polish community at that time was very large. After the fair closed, it went to the Art Institute of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And then in 1941, the Polish Women's Alliance bought it and donated it to the museum. So in 33, we did not exist yet.
And did it hang in prominence since the building opened?
Yes, it did. Actually, it was if you look around at our papal display, there's a picture of it against that wall over there. Then it moved over here.
It's rather large. I don't want to move it.
Yeah.
More from you folks in a moment as we continue. We got to take a break, come back, and get the big story. Dr. Most will join us as well. Senator Durbin later on The Mess in Washington, and the Steve Cochran Show continues from the Polish Museum of America and presented by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Thank you. It's Kasha's Deli, right?
I've got a stomach.
Yes.
Kasha's
yes.
Deli. Find Kasha's products on your local supermarket or visit the deli at 2101 West Chicago Avenue. And we'll talk more with Jan and Margaret coming up as well. But Dr. Kevin Most joins us now. Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
The world's greatest grandchild gave me a cold.
It's always nice to teach them to share early in their life.
Yes. Yep. And it is the best cold I've ever had. Just shows that she's advanced. But this gunk, this funk, this stuff that everybody seems to have, it really hangs on this winter. And we haven't had a winter, but we've had a funky cold.
You've had it for about 2 weeks now.
Yeah, and it's weird, right? Because I wasn't sick for all of last year, and you would think the election would have made me really sick. But I got the bronchitis around New Year's. I had 2 weeks off, and then I got this.
You know, if you would have run the stairs yesterday with Dave, I bet you'd been feeling much better.
I actually tried to get one of those chairs installed to bring me up.
Yep.
It's slow. I mean, it would take like a week.
That kind of defeats the purpose, but yeah.
Yeah, it's great. If I start appearing in those commercials, it's check please time. Dr. Kevin Most is here. Let's talk a little bit about colon cancer right out of the gate, a happy topic, but an important one. Are you seeing more of this at early ages?
Yeah, you know, Steve, it is interesting because we sit here and try to pat ourselves on the back in the health field and say, look at what's happening with colon cancer. Overall rates are decreasing. Everyone's getting colonoscopies. But then when you peel the onion back and you look and you go, oh, wait a second, time out here. Yeah, we're doing great for those over the age of 50 and over the age of 55 because we're seeing a decrease in that age group, but we haven't seen the big number decrease. And then when they look, they say, holy cow, we're starting to see a large increase in those patients aged 30 to 40. People we don't even screen at this point, now we're seeing a big spike in colon cancer and rectal cancer in those individuals.
What do we base it on?
You know, it's very difficult to say. I think you probably remember a year ago, you know, I shared the story of my my cousin who passed away, you know, under the age of 50 from colon cancer. And she was extremely healthy. She had a great lifestyle. She didn't have a bad diet. So we're really trying to figure it out because as they're starting to look at these cases now, they're not seeing the genetic component to it. So we're saying, okay, what else could it be? Well, inactivity, we don't have a good diet in this country. This is colon cancer is a disease of industrial countries. You know, we're eating processed foods. We have too much red meat and not enough vegetables. But that's a cultural thing that's going to be very difficult to change.
Everybody says a Mediterranean diet, a Mediterranean diet, a Mediterranean diet, but it's exactly what you just said. It's like people that say, oh, let's get electric cars. Let's do this, let's do that. You literally have to change embedded habits in a culture of convenience for people that aren't sick yet or don't need it.
Yep. And it does come down to convenience. If we all went and prepared our own meals all the time, we'd probably do a whole heck of a lot better. But drive down any busy street right now, and you're going to see more and more fast food restaurants popping up.
Right.
So you're starting to see those which are high in fat, low in fiber. You know, we're not seeing a lot of places opening up that are selling salads and fruit. So it's going to be very difficult to change. But this should be a big wake-up for us to say, hey, you know what? Pat ourselves on the back. You're doing great for colon cancer screening over the age of 50. But do we have to start looking at younger, unfortunately, because of the culture and the society we live in? Should we start screening earlier? I'm not sure the answer to that. I'm sure they're going to be looking at it because there's risks, benefits, and costs as we start to screen if we move that screening earlier.
Is there any easy link to make just that the kids have never been more obese and therefore, of course, there's more colon cancer? Is that oversimplifying?
No, that's not oversimplifying. That's one of the biggest things that they say right now is obesity and inactivity, unfortunately, in our youths is what's potentially going to be the biggest, they're going to find to be the biggest cause. Because they've already gone down the genetic route saying, oh, you know what, if we can prove it's genetic, we already know that. This just happens to be the earlier genetic, but it doesn't appear that at all. And they're looking and saying, wow, it certainly does appear to be inactivity and obesity in many cases. Although there's still a lot of cases where you're very active and you're under the age of 30 and you'll still probably have more of a bad diet. And those individuals, unfortunately, we're starting to see more and more cases of colon cancer.
What's our marching orders?
The marching orders, you know, it's interesting. As a parent, I would say, hey, tell your kid to put down the video game, get outside and start moving around. And also, let's try, if you're going to have a diet in your home, parents, you control your children's diet. Young adults, you guys control your own diets coming out of school, and now you're in the workforce. College kids, you control your diet. Go to the salad bar instead of, you know, the fast food place. Try to eat a little bit healthier. It's very difficult to do, but we're going to have to, or we're going to continue to see this increase in that age group.
Doc, we had a very active staff this weekend. Dave did the stair climb at the Presidential Towers. I did the polar plunge. And you talk about activity and heart rate. With these extreme events, I mean, is there a way to prepare for that or something that you could do after the fact once you've kind of completed these tasks?
Other than cry?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. You know, Dave doing the stairs, that's a great one. Most people that did that can do it in the right way so that they start their heart rate increasing, they keep their pace at the exact same place, and it's a very good cardiovascular workout, actually fairly healthy. Not great for your knees and back, but still pretty healthy.
Well, Dave and Andre are very competitive. They've been arguing all morning about who's a bigger hero and who took a greater shock to their system. I think I can hear where you're going here.
Mm-hmm. And who hurts more.
And who was the fool.
I mean, the polar plunge, think about it. You're standing on the edge there before you go into this water, and we're darn lucky this year because it could have been a lot colder. And your heart rate is probably, well, you're a little bit excited. Maybe it's 100. You jump into that water, your heart rate goes to 200 immediately. Where Dave took it casually, or not casually, but more of a slower ramp up, like we should when we exercise. A shock to the body like the polar plunge is not really good for our heart. Great for charity, but not really good for our heart.
Yes.
That's why the stair climb chair, my heart rate went from 100 to 101.
Well, you know, I have a heart rate monitor on my watch, and so I checked it during the last tower when I was going up that last stairwell. It was like a 180. That seems a little high, isn't it?
That is a little high there, yeah. Would have loved to seen you in the 140, 150 range based on your age, but you know what? You were probably pushing it at that point. And most people...
You could jump in the water with me, but that probably would have been the adverse effect.
David, your age, you're active. Please enjoy it.
Yes.
It's great. I mean, believe me.
Say it louder. He can't hear you. Stand by. We'll come back with more of Doc in just a second. There's a mumps outbreak in the National Hockey League, which is bizarre. And we're all going to have to get shots going into a game now. No, I'm kidding. But let's talk about that when we come back on 720 WGN. Dr. Kevin Most, live from, are you at the hospital already?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So when we go into a doctor's appointment and we're in the room and, you know, it's after the vitals have been taken and the doctor will be right in, you know, that few minutes.
Yep.
Is it okay if we go through your stuff? Can we go through the drawers and open everything and take out some gauze and things?
Yeah, we know you're doing that. So actually, we really start to think about putting, let's put some fun things in the drawers to see what they find. Yeah.
You ever thought like one of those cartoon boxing gloves that would just punch you right in the nose and go to the wrong door? All right, so there's a breakout of mumps in the National Hockey League. First off, how common is mumps?
Well, it's not very common at all, actually. You know, ever since we started immunizing kids in 1967, we've really seen the number of mumps decrease dramatically in the United States. We have outbreaks and clusters. As a matter of fact, you know, we're talking about the NHL, but these next couple weeks are big weeks for Barrington High School. They had an outbreak, a potential early outbreak, that was identified last week. So we see these little clusters of outbreaks, but for the most part, it's pretty uncommon.
So when you see an outbreak in the NHL where a bunch of really healthy young guys are suddenly getting it, does it make sense to you? Close contact, a small group?
Yep, exactly. The same thing that what you just said there. The bad thing about mumps is you can be contagious before you have any symptoms. So you take a bunch of guys that that have this, and you put them in close contact like that. They, you know how hockey is. Their faces are right up against each other. They don't have mouth guards that are going to cover their face. So there's a lot of spitting, coughing, doing all that when they're playing. They all travel together closely. They all spend a lot of time together. The other thing that's kind of interesting, and why hockey and not basketball, why not all these other sports, is vaccination rates in Canada are much lower than they are in the United States. So are we seeing young hockey players coming in that have not been vaccinated, and they're the source for all this? Not sure, but that's certainly one of the things that they're kicking around.
Can you get mumps from going to a game?
You could get mumps going to a game, yes.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm sitting in the stands and one of the players flies over the glass and lands on me, that's the only way I'm going to get the mumps?
Correct. Or if the person next to you happens to have the mumps when they came to the game. Yep.
All right, so we're perfectly safe as fans.
Might be more
absolutely.
Likely. Doc, we
absolutely safe as fans.
We did the reports on the mumps suspected in the Barrington schools and in the Arlington Heights schools just last week. This was after a student at South Middle School was diagnosed with a possible case of the mumps, and they sent a note home to the parents. I guess my question is, if you're vaccinated, do you have to worry about it? Should you still be on the lookout for signs and symptoms?
Definitely should still be on the lookout. You know, we talk about vaccinations, and we have to remember that it's not 100%. You know, we look at vaccination rates for mumps, and it's probably creeping up somewhere between 80 and 90%. So even someone who got vaccinated still has a 20% chance, if they're exposed to someone with mumps, that they could get mumps. So it's not 100%, but it's the best thing we have, and we've shown across the country that the vaccine works. So these outbreaks, unfortunately, the immunity wanes as we age. So kind of unusual that someone in a middle school, because really they were just vaccinated when they were 5 or 6, would wane that much. Not that unusual when you get into the colleges and you get into, you know, young adulthood. I mean, University of Missouri earlier this year had, you know, 500 cases in January. So we know when we clump those and we get to a point where we're starting to lose some immunity, that we're going to have a higher chance of getting it.
It's Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. And as far as, you know, getting over this cold that I have, you just got to wait it out, I guess, huh?
You do. Fluids and rest, and you know what? It's just kind of more of an aggravation than anything, and you're not the only one out there. I know you feel you are, but there are a lot of people with this upper respiratory that's just kind of hanging on.
Yeah, I don't feel like I'm the only one. I just feel like I'm one of the important ones.
You are. You're probably the most important one, yeah, but you're not the only one.
And one of the honest ones.
I knew I couldn't get that out without spitting up. And before I let you go, does Dave have any sort of recovery things he should be doing today? He had a very busy day yesterday. He did the six or seven or eight towers. And did
I think
them backwards
there were only
four. And forwards.
Well, yeah, I did that.
And then he did the game, and then he did TV last night.
That's amazing. I can't believe he didn't call in sick today. That's what
I would never
done.
Call in sick, Doc.
He's Iron Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's Iron Dave.
And, hey, Northwestern, great game. I still think they're in, Dave. I'm sure you do, too, as well. But
so as you can tell, Doc has no interest in your medical health. He just wants to talk about you.
That's okay.
Iron Lung Dave.
Not Iron Lung Dave. Iron Man.
Iron Man
really?
Dave, yes.
What?
Iron Lung Dave Thank would not you, be a good thing. No.
Dave is in better shape than anyone on this phone call.
Yes.
Does that include you?
Yes, it does.
Oh, okay.
For his age.
Well, thanks.
For his
oh.
age.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
We should probably say good morning to Sophia, who normally we see every morning in the studio,
yes.
Tidying up for us. Mm-hmm. One of our favorite Polish Americans.
Yes, and she brought us her homemade punchkis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that correctly?
Yes, you are.
Punchkis.
Joining us now here at the Polish Museum of America on Kazimierz Pulaski Day. Oh, I just put my tongue in my left ear. is the Secretary Treasurer Jim Robiszewski.
Yep, that's me.
Is that close?
Yeah, we're real close. It's Robiszewski.
So close.
I know.
If I pronounce one name correct before we leave, I get to keep the job and come back tomorrow.
That's what I hear.
All right, so Secretary Treasurer means you're the rainmaker. You're the guy that's going to keep the doors open.
Yeah, that is. Can I tell you about our company?
Sure.
We're a 143-year-old fraternal benefits company that's been based in Chicago for only 142 of the 143.
What happened?
They kicked us out of Detroit. No, I don't know. but we've been in the same location. We built this building 103 years ago.
Okay.
And so we are the founding. The museum was founded by the Polish Roman Catholic Union, and now they're a freestanding company of their own.
Now, this is a city where great deals are made.
Mm-hmm.
Back when this building had to be built, was it an empty lot, I assume, or did you have to knock something down?
You know what? I don't know. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
So we have pictures of a groundbreaking.
Well,
so
my,
it was
my
a
point is
lot.
It couldn't be more convenient.
Oh, no,
there's no one who could ever say, I can't find it. I mean, it's literally right off the expressway.
Well, but that wasn't there 103 years ago.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. It was just Milwaukee Avenue.
Yeah. But it was Milwaukee to Ogden. That's all you needed,
That's
right?
all you needed.
Yeah. All right, so in keeping the doors open, because this is really, I mean, we're not making light of this at all. This is a very important cultural landmark.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I'm right about this. Isn't Chicago still the largest Polish-American population in the country per capita?
The Chicagoland area, yeah. I don't believe Chicago proper, but
okay.
That's just my stats.
Okay. So we know that, and we know that it's very dependent, then, I would suppose, on the communities here to help with funding.
That's the museum is dependent on funding of Polonia, of the people of Polish descent in the United States.
And do you see a lot of funding from outside Chicago itself?
We get funding from benefactors for the museum from Detroit, yes, but Dallas, out east, wherever there's a Polish community.
I don't think of Dallas having a Polish community. That's interesting to me.
Well, actually, the interesting thing, people don't realize that one of the first Polish community settlement in the United States was in Ponte Maria, Texas, which is a suburb of San Antonio.
Why has there never been a Polish cowboy movie? Maybe there has.
There has, we just don't know.
Yeah, maybe I missed it. So how can people help? Maybe they're not of Polish descent. Maybe they just want to keep a great Chicago landmark open.
Well, for the Polish Museum, they have a membership drive every year. They have appeals for funding to come in.
And we don't have to be Polish.
You don't have to be Polish to make a donation.
We don't have to make a great pierogi.
Nope.
Okay.
Well, I don't make a great pierogi, but, you know.
You pronounce that well, by the way.
Yeah, I'm learning. So where do we get information? The website?
You can go to the website for Polish Museum. It's a short website. It's polishmuseumofamerica.org.
Well, that's not terrible.
Easy enough.
It's one of the longest ones I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But you can go there, and they can have PayPal access or the address to mail in any kind of funding.
Okay.
And the Polish community, community is key for the for the Polish community. Obviously, St. Stanislaus is right here. You have classes. There are classes here, too, like Polish language classes on the weekends, too?
Right now, in this building itself, we offer Polish for English-speaking adults, basically. Oh. We have that on
so English adults who want to learn the language of their ancestors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, do you teach English to Polish-speaking adults?
Not here, no.
That's a different building.
That's a different building. Now, we do, part of the organization that I'm secretary charge for is the Polish Roman Catholic Union of America. We have Polish dance schools, Polish language schools around the country that we help fund, and they teach culture to the young children and the young adults.
And the food is fantastic anytime you're here.
Always.
We got a lesson on food here, too.
You have a plate floor right there. So
I just picture a string of Polish folks in the back cooking nonstop 24/7, even when folks aren't here.
Well, no. Well, we give them a couple hours off.
Oh, you do? Okay. And this great hall that we're in now, you and I were talking before we got on the air this morning, some fantastic artwork here. But the Polish Community of Chicago display is up. I love the old photography. There's some great tributes to Polish war heroes, obviously. Kazimierz Spolaski, dating back further than that. But it really is. It's a testament to the Chicago Polish community and the Polish community at large.
Mm-hmm.
Well done, in other words.
It is. It's well done. It's as it's declared itself a hidden gem. There's so much stuff here that people don't realize it. There's an art gallery actually on the fourth floor as well that has right now Art Deco period paintings and things up there.
And the Pope display, too.
And right adjacent to the Pope display, there's because as we all know, in 1979 when the Pope came here, but he also was here as cardinal to prior visits, that he's actually in this building.
Oh, that's great. The library downstairs is, I'm told, quite epic. I would assume it's a great place for research for people, right?
It's a great place.
People in there doing master's work all the time?
There's people doing work, you know, any kind of history work down there. There are volumes dating back to the 1500s to everything.
Wow.
You can get a copy of Harry Potter in Polish if you'd like.
Oh, that's cool. You better learn the language, though, first before we do that. Hey, are there any plans to bring Pope Francis to Chicago?
That I don't know. Okay. I couldn't answer that.
We'll start it. We'll start.
We can make
we'll
a petition
for it.
Could you make a call?
Yeah.
I can call somebody, maybe.
Yeah, because that would be great.
Give people the website again.
The website is PolishMuseumOfAmerica.org.
Right. And you suburban types who go, I only come into the city to see the Christmas lights. Make your way in.
Yeah, there's also...
You got a parking lot and everything.
You got a huge parking lot. We also this is decorated for Christmas, and they also have... At Christmas time, the museum has ornament workshops.
Oh, cool.
So you make traditional Polish ornament workshops. And coming up with Easter now, they do Easter egg dyeing. They do things like that. So keep tradition going.
Well, keep up the fine work, my friend, and thank you for hosting us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Oh, so I didn't ask you this, but some of the events coming up later today, you want to talk about that or you want to come back?
I can talk whenever
you want. Give me it right now.
Okay, right now, today is Kazimierz Pulaski Day, as
sure,
we all know.
Sure,
Starting at 10 o'clock in the Great Hall of the Polish Museum will be a presentation all about Pulaski. There will be Governor Rauner will be here, Senator Dick Durbin will be here, other politicians will be here as well, giving speeches and talking about Polonia. It'll end up with a wreath laying at the Pulaski painting that's up in front of the Great Hall.
It's a wonderful thing, and the community at large is expected to attend this morning. They'll be here, I know.
There should be a few hundred people, 300 to 400 people.
Right, and politicians love that.
Oh, they love it.
And speaking of Senator Durbin, he'll be on with us in a few minutes.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Okay, thank
Appreciate
you.
Museum of America. We just dropped a pen on the wood floor, and it sounded like a shot went off. God, the acoustics in here are... We should just do the show
Look
from
at that.
Here.
All right. Imagine when the dancers
come
we
in. Are doing the show from here. This is the Polish Museum of America in Chicago, and this is Allstate agent Adam Razny will be joining us a little bit later. Part of the reason we're here is, of course, the Hometown Voices tour. We talked about Dave and Andrea both surviving the polar plunge and the stair climb yesterday. And just, you know, in all seriousness, thank you guys for doing that.
Absolutely. We had a good time doing it.
Love it.
Well done by the two of you. Some of the things that came up over the weekend, and we're going to talk to Representative Quigley, and he is a big supporter of the museum as well, but we'll get him on here in just a few minutes about that and other things. But a couple of things came up over the weekend were sort of washed away by more political news out of Washington. So if you backtrack a week ago, the president had a very good speech to a joint session of Congress, and he hadn't really been tweeting much, and everything was sort of calm. And then Friday, as things had developed more with Attorney General Sessions, he was on a naval carrier in Florida, mm-hmm. and he was asked, do you think the Attorney General should resign, or should recuse himself, I should say? And he said, no, I don't think so. Well, an hour and a half, he did. So Trump, apparently, when he came back from Florida, was very upset.
Yes.
And he grounded. This amuses me. I don't know why. Well, they're grown men. That's why it amuses me. He grounded Reince Priebus and Steve Bannon.
How about that?
And said they couldn't go to Florida with him.
I was more surprised about the Steve Bannon grounding. But how interesting is that? The reporter saying that normally, you know, you do the photo op and they come out and you wave goodbye. He's going to Mar-a-Lago for the weekend. They could see very tense moment. They could see arguing of some sort. And then Priebus just kind of said, well, I'm not going. I have other work here in Washington.
The pool video through the window saw
yes.
Priebus and Trump flailing their arms around.
Yeah, in a heated exchange.
Right. So apparently what Trump was upset about is, and if you remember the Friends episode where this happened, somebody stole his thunder.
Right,
that's,
yes.
That's specifically what he was upset about. Somebody stole his thunder. So the speech got to a point where somebody stole his thunder. Why is all this important? Well, it's important because the session story will linger. But it's also important because Saturday morning he woke up with still filled with anger. He decided to invite Bannon down. He summoned Bannon to come to a dinner Saturday night. But he then fired off a series of tweets. And by now most of you have heard the story, but the tweets were all indicative of the fact that he believes that President Obama bugged Trump Tower and ordered wiretapping of his phones at Trump Tower.
And what would be, say it was true, which I highly doubt, what would be the reason for doing that?
Well, I suppose you could go to this extent. If there was reason for a sitting president, which he was in December, to believe that Donald Trump and his people were colluding with Russians in not just hacking the election, but possibly affecting the process of our government, then for the security of our government, the president seemingly could say, I want information on it. However, one slight problem. The president doesn't do that. The only way you can get a wiretap order is through a FISA court, and the only way a FISA court can do it is if, in fact, judges, in this case it's not just a panel of judges, one judge says, yes, we'll give you that warrant. Fast forward to yesterday. The director of national intelligence, James Clapper, was on with our friend Chuck Todd. And Clapper is in a position at DNI, which he was for the past several years, to know what every warrant is which goes to wiretapping on that sort of level, because mm-hmm. domestic surveillance is his beat. He said it didn't happen. He said it absolutely didn't happen. So the unprecedented part of this is Donald Trump has dug himself a huge hole here, again, self-injurious. Injurious or injurious?
Injurious, I would
Injurious
think.
Behavior? Yeah. He hurt himself is what I'm trying to say. Donald Trump, in the process of doing this, has stepped on his own foot. Because what he did here is he created a scenario where, in an unprecedented manner, he's accusing a former president of bugging his phones, mm-hmm. factually incorrect, when he could have picked up the phone and called anyone. This is the thing that continues to amaze me. Google is jealous of the amount of information Donald Trump has. Donald Trump can pick up the phone and get any information he wants at any time about anything. And if he really had this suspicion, which apparently came from Breitbart and Mark Levin, the talk show host, he could literally go to one of his people and say, is there any chance this is true? Look into this. Before you hit send, don't hit send, don't hit tweet, because his series of tweets said that this was Nixon behavior, bad analogy for President Trump to be using. This is Nixonian behavior, and he called Obama a bad or a sick guy. And he really dug himself a huge hole. The White House has now asked Congress to look into whether or not Obama abused his executive powers. At the same time, they're trying to slow down the investigation of whether or not the Russia story is real or not, as more and more sources come out to say that many members of Trump's team were, in fact, in contact with the Russian ambassador and other Russian sources throughout the fall. The end run on all of this is very little gets done in government when all of this happens. That's what we've talked about it before. Everybody wants to talk about, oh, impeach, impeach, impeach. Impeachment's a horrible outcome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just it's a nightmarish outcome because the entire country is weakened by that. But this guy cannot get out of his own way. He's in his 45th day of his presidency. 45 hits 45. And he may not make 46 the way this is going. It's just really stumbling, kicking it on his own. And he continues to just get in his own way in ways that are really unprecedented. He didn't have to send out any tweets Saturday morning. They were all wrong. And really, the most disturbing tweet of all was the last one that he sent out, which said, and Arnold Schwarzenegger didn't leave The Apprentice on his own. He was fired.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
President Obama, through a spokesman, denied any direct involvement. Does President Trump not believe him?
Well, I think, they don't have the best track record. They said they had a cardinal rule. Well, frankly, that's just not true. The president himself got directly involved when it came to the email scandal with Hillary Clinton.
So do you not believe him when he says this doesn't happen? The attorney general met privately
and secretly with Bill Clinton during the middle of an investigation. So to pretend like this is a very clean and credible source coming from, I'm sorry, I'm just not buying that.
White House spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders talking to ABC yesterday about Obama's denial of the wiretap claim. Obama hasn't said anything on a record. His people have responded to it. He has been put in the position of having to say something. I'm not quite sure why Bill Clinton meeting with the attorney general is Obama's fault. Thanks, Obama. But the fact that anybody wants to go backwards at this point is just more of a distraction. Again, I don't care what Hillary Clinton's doing. She's wandering in the woods in upstate New York. I hope she doesn't see a bear.
Although they did put a picture of her on when she, they showed her when
Mike Pence.
When
she was looking at
the Mike Pence. Yeah, and her face was kind of like,
yeah, don't
what?
Care. Don't care.
I don't care.
What I care about is this president doing the job, and it's not getting done. Congressman Mike Quigley joins us. Before we get to all the news of the day, Congressman, first, welcome to the show. Appreciate you coming back on. How are you?
I'm good. I can't help but remember the old Chicago Stadium, season ticket holder for the Blackhawks in the second balcony, and all you had was the crowd, the organ music, and the stench of stale beer and cigars. It was awesome.
Happy Pulaski Day to you. And talk a little bit about what the Polish Museum of America means in your world.
I think Chicago still has the largest Polish population outside of Warsaw in the world. So I'll be there at 10 o'clock for the event and looking forward to it and see my Polish constituents.
The museum itself is a wonderful building that we've talked about off and on throughout the morning, and we'll talk more about. But if you're coming over for this, take some time to wander around and take a look at some of the artifacts that are here.
And save me a pastry.
I don't like your chances. I'll be honest with you. This is one hungry crew this morning. I don't know what they're doing. All right, let's talk about the weekend. You are amongst the most, if not the most, bipartisan members of your party. You want to work across the aisle. You want to try to get things done. How do you get anything done with this president in this climate?
This one's tough. People always ask, let's find a middle ground. And I'll be honest, there are, I would say, still a majority of the Republicans in the House that I think you could get something done with. You could get a transportation bill. You could get tax reform. You could work things out. But there are extremists on both sides that make it tough. And I'll be honest, this president, regardless of what he said to the joint session, he still stakes out positions that are way out there. And then, you know, which president is it? Is it the president who seems conciliatory, says NATO is important, or is it the president that says it's obsolete, says he wants a path to citizenship on immigration, and then he says we're going to build a wall and have a paramilitary endeavor to deport 11 million people? You just don't know when you wake up in the morning which president you're going to hear from.
And that, of course, creates its own walls, symbolic walls that keep things from happening. But what happened over the weekend is unprecedented in throwing a former president under the bus with no evidence, saying he bugged Trump Tower. And it seems to be, and we've not heard anything to refute this, that the only evidence he had of this was either a Breitbart story or talk show host Mark Levin's show on Thursday night. The president has access to every bit of information he'd ever need. Why would he go with tweeting that out without knowing more?
Yeah, this is a familiar pattern. I think when he was in the primary season working against the mainstream Republicans, he did the same thing routinely. Whenever the news cycle wasn't in his favor, he would shoot something else out there that was so outrageous you'd forget everything else. And, you know, the old Truman sign, the buck stops here, no longer applies. When it comes to Yemen, it's the general's fault. When it comes to these problems with the intelligence and the investigation, it's either the intel community's fault or leaks, his senior staff, the Democrats, and now President Obama. Look, he inherited problems. We get that. They're all things we have to overcome. But all I'm suggesting is that the president has to accept responsibility. And in the end, when something goes wrong, it lies at his feet.
Congressman, let's talk about Russia. Should there be an investigation? I mean, it seems like this is really taking a back seat to everything else that seems to be going on right now, at least on the Trump end. Yet last week when we spoke, you were very adamant and said Jeff Sessions should resign. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, I do. But let's just, again, that's, to me, important because I can't imagine that something is more important than an investigation into whether the Russians' active measures involved collusion with people, especially in the Trump campaign, and how we prevent that again. I mean, I can't imagine it's anything that's more important than at least understanding that, and that's why there's bipartisan support to do the investigation. So when the lead law enforcement officer of the United States swears to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and he doesn't do that, that's a problem at this critical time. There are a lot of people who would be on the razor's edge of being indicted for saying, giving that answer to the FBI or anybody else, much less the United States Senate. So will there be an investigation? That I understand he's amending his answer to the Senate today. I don't even want to get lost in that. I just want to stress the fact that I'm on the Intelligence Committee. What we heard last week from Mr. Comey and the briefings we've been getting and what we've read so far only convinces me even more. Wherever the facts take us, we can't have a glimmer of uncertainty as to whether there's independence in the investigation, especially from the person who would be the prosecutor.
There is nothing about this that goes to whether or not Donald Trump is the president, and it seems to be the only one more in. The most insecure person about all of that is Donald Trump. So this isn't about Hillary Clinton. This isn't about anything other than that you cannot allow in any way, shape, or form a foreign power, and specifically Russia, to interfere with our election. I don't know how many times that has to be said before people understand that's the point of an investigation. But my concern is, and this isn't a Republican or a Democrat thing, this is an American thing, I don't think this can be done behind closed doors. Because we then have to go with trust in a body that has a 9% approval rate, that being the United States Congress.
Yeah, I think there's a combination here. I think the Intelligence Committee, my committee, meets in private because we're protecting sources and methods and people's lives and how we protect our country. I think there's some instances in which the only way you're going to get to that core information about what took place is in that setting. At the same time, there should be an independent commission, as there was with 9/11, where we can sort these things out. And both entities should have public hearings. And when this is done, everything that could be revealed should be revealed as soon as possible, to the extent possible, to the entire public.
The White House has asked for an investigation into Obama's abuse of executive power, but they still haven't said, give me a full readout on what happened with Russia and my people. Can't they all be done together?
Well, I think so. The president's extraordinarily concerned about leaks. And honestly, I think he's absolutely right. First, we don't want an investigation by leaks. Leaks are dangerous. But let's remember, this is a president who professed his affection for WikiLeaks, who encouraged the Russians to hack Mrs. Clinton. He's not exactly on the high moral ground here. All that being said, We can do both. And again, the American public deserves to know the truth, follow the facts wherever they should take us. And I guess finally on that point, I've heard folks say, you know, who cares? The election is over. Well, even if you don't care that that took place, which is amazing, the attacks are still a threat. This is not just the DNC or D-Trip that the Russians hacked. They've shown a willingness to hack into our institutions like utilities, and we have to defend ourselves from this. And finally, if there was collusion, wouldn't you want to know what, if any, promises were made involving Ukraine or U.S. security?
Yeah, and the president should want to know that, too, of who of his people, who of the people he has trusted can he trust? And he should be demanding that as well. You know, the only way to go forward, there's too much water under the bridge here. The only way to go forward with a clean slate is to get to the bottom of all of it. And if he's innocent, I'll be the first one to say, congratulations, let's push forward.
I'd like to think this is, while there was hacking and there was Russian involvement, that there was no collusion, because it would be a devastating blow that this sort of thing can take place. But you have to find out. It has to take its course.
It's Congressman Mike Quigley, who is just as happy as I am that the Hawks are as hot as they are. And the Hawks are now just toying with people. They'll get behind by a goal with a few seconds to go, then tie it, and then win it in overtime or a shootout. But it's nothing but fun at the Madhouse.
Stay healthy, stay hot, and get ready for the playoffs. It really doesn't matter as much to me that you win the President's Trophy, most points in the regular season. It's who goes in there hot with a great goalie, and that's who's got the best chance to win.
Long-time season ticket holder, Mike Quigley. Congressman, thanks for being here, and we'll see you over here in a few minutes.
Very good. Thank you.
This is WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour, live from the Polish Museum of America, presented by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands. Yeah, no, no, no. This is the thing where I dance and I cross my arms in front of me and I kick my legs up. I'm wearing sneakers. You can't hear it on the floor. Take it to Kosh's Deli, Kosh's products in the local supermarket, or visit the deli on West Chicago Avenue. And John Oliver, last night, you know, and a lot of people go, well, it's just easy fodder for comedians, this whole Trump thing. Yeah, it is. Here's John Oliver.
It is not clear what is really going on here yet, although one possibility is that this all amounts to what I'm going to call stupid Watergate. A potential scandal with all the intrigue of Watergate, except everyone involved, is really bad at everything. And the relevant question isn't so much what did the president know and when did he know it, as it is the president physically capable of knowing things at all? Because yesterday he decided that this was the best way to dispel everyone's suspicions.
It was just before sunrise in Palm Beach when the President of the United States took to Twitter to make one of his most stunning accusations ever. Terrible. Just found out that Obama had my wires tapped in Trump Tower just before the victory. Nothing found. Followed by four more presidential outbursts taking on President Obama and misspelling tap.
Okay. Let me give you some context for where we are. In 1992, Dan Quayle misspelled potato, and it became one of the most famous dumb moments in political history. But we are now at a point where the president is so busy hurling destabilizing conspiracy theories around, we can't even pause to enjoy the fact he misspelled the word tap.
It's John Oliver last week tonight on your HBO, over and over again all week. And the Steve Cochran Show continues live from the Polish Museum of America. Coming up after 8, we've got some more folks here to get together with. Dean's off today. And, Andrea, check show business news, see if there's anything breaking.
We have some really interesting things you'll love to know.
All right. And Senator Durbin will join us on the phone here in a few minutes as well, in the continuing nonsense from Washington. All of this is good news to Mike Madigan, because I don't have time to get on this. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour, live from the beautiful Polish Museum of America in Chicago, presented by Allstate. Chicago's own good hands, big day here. It's a Kashmir's Pulaski Day. They got a big celebration coming up.
You're saying that very well, by the way.
Just recently celebrated their 80th anniversary. We invite you to come here, see this this facility, support it. You don't have to be Polish to do that. And it's a cool thing to bring your kids to. Teach
yeah,
them some great history.
The artwork is just magnificent.
None of it done by me. President of the Polish Museum of America with us now, Richard Oshani. And Richard, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
Well, thank you very much for having us here.
Well, thanks for hosting us is what I should be saying. Tell me how you got involved with the building.
Well, I became a member maybe about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been coming to the museum since I was a kid. This is the place where you came, you know, to learn about your heritage, learn about your culture.
School trips or mostly family?
Mostly family.
Okay.
And, you know, it had an impact on me as a child, you know, as a growing up. And, you know, you never think years later that I'd be involved intimately with, you know, helping run this place.
It's a big transition from hearing your grandparents or your aunts or uncles or everybody telling stories about the old days to actually going back and looking at the history. Do you have a greater appreciation for it?
Well, absolutely. You know, as a kid, you don't think about things like that. You think about why am I here, and oh, okay, I see this, I see that. But as you grow older and you learn about your heritage, you learn about your past, things take a different significance. And there are many things in this museum that have a personal connection, you know, to someone that comes here, especially me, especially my father, who was a veteran in the Polish Army. We have an exhibit that details World War II and the Polish contribution in that effort.
Wow.
And so when you see that, there's a personal connection for me.
Yeah, and if any of you actually have the History Channel, you may have seen the Nazis invaded Poland. It was a bad time. Here's the thing that I like about it. A lot of places call themselves a museum. It really is a museum. You've got artifacts here that are incredible. We were told some of the library stuff downstairs dates back centuries.
Yes, well, you know, this is a place where you can come to and you can meet history. You can see Kościuszko, Pułaski, Paderewski. You can see artists like Kossak. You can also see things that are personal to them. You know, if you look at some of the exhibits, we have personal effects. If you go into our Paderewski room, you know, we have a replication of the Buckingham Hotel where he lived his last years of life.
Oh, really?
And his personal effects, playing cards, cigarettes, manuscripts. His piano, his bed, his furniture. So you actually are seeing, you know, the history, the man who lived there and has his items here in this building.
Are there still finds you'd love to have as part of the museum?
Oh, always. There's always something that's always out there that makes
something's in grandma's attic or something.
You know, people have stuff all over the place, and people sometimes, you know, don't even know what they have in their homes or, you know, even throughout the country and throughout the world. You know, we always are getting calls from people, you know, saying we've got this, we've got that. Obviously, we can't take everything, but when
but it could
some,
well be a value.
But
if
there's some
why not ask?
If there's a historical significance to it, and it brings something to the museum that will educate people coming here, absolutely.
How do you curate all that?
Pardon me?
How do you curate all that? Is there a committee or something?
Well, yeah, we have a you know, the board runs, you know, the museum, and then there are our day-to-day staff who, you know, we have archivists, we have people who are specialists in items like this who can, you know, tell the difference between
something. You have Jan's
our historian who provides a lot of information and research on a lot of things that happens here. So we have specialized people here, as well as, you know, the board of directors and officers who contribute their time in making sure this place runs and has an appeal to the public.
Sure.
Richard, you talk about replicas, but there's a lot of original items here as well. It seems to be the papal robes and then the statues and, of course, the artwork, too, that we've been talking about.
Right. Yeah. Everything here, there's really no replication of anything. If you look behind you, we have a royal sleigh that was carved out, you know, in the 17th century, you know, for a princess. You know, we've got items that are, you know, if you go into the Paderewski room, we have, you know, the pen that he signed the Treaty of Versailles, which, you know, recognized Poland as a country after 123 years of not being on the face of Europe. So there are many artifacts in this museum that have a strong historical significance to Poles, Polish Americans, and it's something that we want to display for not only Poles but everybody. So you know, all Americans, and you know, we have a lot of visitors coming from all over the country, from all over the Europe, you know, who are amazed at the collections, especially when they come and see, for example, our art gallery, or they look at the historical aspects of the museum. They're taken aback and they learn something, and that's very important. They learn something about Poles and Polish Americans.
Sure, it's a great place for kids, obviously, but it's a great place for everybody to come by. If anybody has questions, information, wants to help, any of those things, call?
Call or go on our website, www.PolishMuseumOfAmerica.org. And we have we have all the information up on our website that will give you a peek into what the museum's about. We're looking for volunteers. We're looking for sponsors. We're looking for financial support. And we're looking for people to visit us.
And Senator Durbin will be coming in later. He's going to join us in just a minute. Phone number. Phone number, anyone? Here we go. 312. 773. This is just occurring to me now. And Margaret didn't hand me the card. 773-384-3352. Thank you very much. Sorry, Mr. President. Didn't mean to put you on the spot. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. We're very honored to have you here.
Senator Durbin joins us now. He's on his way, making his way over here to the Polish Museum of America. Governor Rauner will be here as well. Congressman Quigley. Good morning, Senator.
How you doing, Steve?
I am fine. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. I'm headed back to Washington this afternoon, and it's in turmoil, as you know, because of some of the news that was reported over the weekend.
Yeah, well, obviously I want to get to that, but I also want to give you a chance to talk about your saber, because we're seated just a few feet from your saber, and I don't have a saber. What can you tell me about your saber?
Well, that's an interesting thing. A few years back, I joined a group that pushed for Poland to be part of NATO, and when they became part of NATO, there was a ceremony, and I'm darned if they didn't present eight members of Congress with a Polish cavalry saber. And I thought to myself, what am I going to do with this?
Right.
So I thought, perfect place is to put it in the museum there. And so they've displayed it. And that's where it ought to be.
It looks beautiful. Your staff did tell our staff that they're glad you don't have it in D.C. on a rough day.
That's right. The moments when I would like to come. But I need a horse. I mean, it's for cavalry. It's all right.
Well, we know how important this this building is and this museum is, so we look forward to seeing you here a little bit later. But before we get to any of that, over the weekend, once again, President Trump did something that's unprecedented, and I'd like to tell you it's good news, but it's not. The idea that someone who has been worried about delegitimizing his own presidency, who has already delegitimized the FBI, taken a shot to delegitimize the Justice Department, certainly made comments about delegitimizing Congress, has now said a former president bugged the Trump Tower. Your thoughts?
Well, of course, I don't believe it for a minute. President Obama denied it, and I'm sure people say, well, why? Well, of course he would. And then the director of national intelligence on television yesterday denied it. And then the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation denied it, took a step further and said to the Department of Justice, I want you to suspend the rules, which say you're not supposed to make a public report of it. Make a public report of it. We did not tap his phone. So you've got to ask yourself, what is he up to? If it were a serious charge, he would have made it at a press conference with the attorney general and everybody standing next to him. But to make it in a tweet at 6:30 in the morning, I think we all know what this is. He's playing games, and he's doing it with the credibility of the presidency.
Talk for a minute, if you can, because there's quantifiable damage and damage that you can't quantify, but it goes on every day. The rest of the world reads news about America and consumes news about America, and they're hearing this. What does that mean to the rest of the world?
I'll give you an example. 2 weeks ago, I was in Warsaw, Poland. Why was I there? Because they're scared to death about what President Donald Trump is going to do to their future in Poland. And the reason, of course, they don't share his high regard for Vladimir Putin. They're worried about what's going on with the missiles that Putin is putting in the Republic of Kaliningrad, right next to Poland. They're worried about possible invasion. We think in the United States, oh, he'd never do that. Ask the people of Ukraine. You know, he did it. And he's done it before in places like Georgia. So this president and his political views are raising questions around the world from traditional allies, not just Poland, but Australia and others that have been with us through thick and thin. And that is worrisome.
Senator, which would be atop the congressional to-do list, investigating Russian interference, the Jeff Sessions possible perjuring himself, the Obama wiretap, the immigration ban, which right now is number one for today?
Well, for investigation, it would be the Russian interference in our election campaign, which was verified by every intelligence agency. It is the first time we know that a foreign government has tried to influence the outcome of an American election at the highest level. This is something we can't take for granted. I'm not going to shrug my shoulders and say boys will be boys. This is a big deal, and we ought to consider it as such. Was the Trump campaign involved in it? I don't know. But an investigation, a credible investigation, can find that out, at least to the best of our knowledge. In the meantime, Putin is going to be sitting in Moscow laughing up his sleeve. Here he is pushing for the election of Donald Trump, a man who says that he's a superhero, and he wins. Trump wins. And in the meantime, they're negotiating in the Republican platform at the convention whether they're going to say anything negative about Putin's invasion of Ukraine. I mean, it's terrible that it's reached this point. That is the highest priority.
It seems to me, and certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but the one person who could change the course of the story is Donald Trump, and not by diversion, but if he is in fact innocent of all charges and his people are innocent of all charges, simply say as president of the United States and say it today. Say, I want a full, independent investigation of Russia, Russia's ties, and all of the above, wherever it goes. And
Leon Panetta
insisting...
said that yesterday, Steve.
I'll say
Leon Panetta was on television yesterday, said exactly that. And he was chief of staff to Clinton during the darkest moments. And he said, you have got to say at some point, we cannot stay behind this story. We've got to get in front of it. And that means full cooperation. We're sunk if we don't. And that's what it means here. If Donald Trump and his campaign did nothing wrong, so be it. And they ought to say, complete the investigation. We're confident of the outcome. But that's not what we're getting.
There's a very large concern about how transparent this investigation will be. I think you said it first here, or certainly one of the early moments you said it. You certainly said it before anybody else did, that we need this to be an independent investigation. It's ridiculous how Chaffetz and the House have dragged their feet on this. But the Senate has been slow to react as well, and I made it clear I'm no Mitch McConnell fan, but it seems the Senate's getting more done than the House. Can you describe what sort of investigations are going on now and if they're going to be enough for people?
Well, the two serious ones are the Intelligence Committees of the Senate and House. The House has been discounted, the effort, because Congressman Nunez, a Republican of California, has questioned whether there was even an investigation necessary. On the Senate side, Burr, Republican of North Carolina, and Warner, Democrat of Virginia, seem to be moving forward. What I like about the committee, there's some real independent, principled people from both political parties sitting on the committee. What I don't like, it'll be behind closed doors. It'll be a secret investigation, which maybe a year from now, 2 years from now, they'll publish a classified report, which the public won't see unless the White House approves public review. That, to me, is not the way it should go. It ought to be an independent, transparent commission. Let's put somebody like Colin Powell in as chairing it. Sandra Day O'Connor, I mentioned her name, former Supreme Court Justice, people we trust. Put them in the position of chairing this, and let's get to the bottom of the public side of this.
And to be the most generous I could possibly be here, I don't have any idea why the president wouldn't push for that, if in fact he is concerned about what's good for America and what's good for his administration.
Feel the same way, but, you know, there's another possibility out there, and that is that there was some collusion. We'll never know until we have a thorough, credible, open investigation.
What do you expect to develop today? You know, the diversionary stuff continues, obviously. The signing of a new executive order, which we believe won't include Iraq, could be coming up today. But one of the real frustrations is now Sean Spicer and others have said, we're not going to answer questions about this anymore. I don't know if they ever saw any of the movies or read any of the books, but this is exactly how Nixon messed up all the way through Watergate. And I'm not even comparing the two, but that's the easiest draw to make.
It's a cliche in Washington, but it's true. It's not the crime. It's the cover-up. And that's why the president and the White House ought to come out four square in favor of a complete investigation and say we're going to cooperate from start to finish. We have nothing to hide. If they don't, this thing is not going to go away. Sean Spicer is not going to be able to stonewall it.
Do you expect this to drag, or do you expect there to be some quicker action now that Saturday happened?
Well, I think it's going to take a long time. A legitimate investigation would take a long time. But the FBI is underway. And Comey, is serious about it. He's told us. And if he is, perhaps there'll be some things coming forward. But it's serious. It's involved. It will take time to do it right professionally. And I want the answer, whether it's something politically I like or don't like. I think the American people deserve an answer.
Senator, speaking of that, Kellyanne Conway this morning was quoted as saying that Donald Trump has information and intelligence that the rest of us do not have. Could that be possible? Is that just completely erroneous?
Well, of course it's possible. And he should have more than anyone. I mean, there are things the president will be told that the other people won't be told. But to have the former president, Obama, to have Clapper, head of the director of national intelligence, Comey, the head of the FBI, all of them say it didn't happen, is pretty definitive. You know, it isn't. They aren't equivocating. I'm a politician. I know how to duck a question. They weren't ducking it. They just said flat out it didn't happen. Now, to say that the president knows about it, we know that Breitbart, this news source from Steve Bannon and others, speculated about it, and we think that's what brought the president to tweet at 6:30 in the morning. But I'm sorry, Kellyanne Conway, nice lady, I've met her, but her credibility is not the best.
No, I can say that for sure. And lastly, do you expect the president, President Obama in this case, to speak about this? Personally, I hope he doesn't, because the last thing we need is a world image of two presidents going back and forth.
I hope he doesn't. I hope he doesn't. I think he had to say and deny this wiretap. And what he tried to do was preserve as much evidence as possible before he left office. But I know, having spoken to him, he hopes to take the position, as most former presidents do, to step to the side and let the new president govern. That's the way it should be.
Appreciate your time, sir, and enjoy your time here. We will not touch your saber, I promise.
I'll be there shortly. See you guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Senator Durbin coming in here to the Polish Museum of America, where we continue next with a big story on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Today is WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour, live from the Polish Museum of America in Chicago, presented in part by Allstate agent Adam Razny. We mentioned the great artwork here, and I have a piece that, I mean, you guys be honest with me, Dave, Andre.
Yes?
I have a piece that I think would be great here. It's dogs making punchkis.
Oh.
Dogs playing pool and dogs playing table tennis. Dogs making punchkis is a very unique piece.
I bet if it exists, it's already here.
You think so?
Yes. Everything is here.
That's a big building. I haven't seen everything.
And we saw you lingering by Senator Durbin's saber, too. So he sent us a text saying, hands off.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is really cool.
It's pretty cool. And I don't think security would like it if he came in and I suddenly challenged him to a duel.
Would you like to have a duel?
Uh-oh.
I almost went into the French accent.
I know.
Yes.
Dave, how do your legs feel?
Actually, they feel good. I feel good. I have no complaints.
You're in tremendous shape. You have the legs of a much younger man.
No, no.
Of a gazelle.
Now, I have to tell you, we had about 30, I don't know about that. We had about 30 people from the station, 30 plus some WGN TV in the Fight for Air Climb yesterday. And I'll tell you, there were some people just flying by, people from our marketing department, from sales. They were a blur going up those stairs.
That's who, nice. They didn't come by the polar plunge, but that's okay.
Who is team fastest on stair climb?
Well, I think one person standing right over here, Shanae.
Shanae? Oh, yeah.
Shanae was really fast.
Yeah. Why was Jimmy on top waiting?
Our boss Stephanie posted a picture of her finish, and she was 300th place.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Well,
it doesn't seem like it's that good to me, though. 300.
The place that it depends what age group they put you in.
What
she's
did you
young,
finish?
Because like I was listed. Well, I was it said on my.
You're in a nearly dead group.
No, I was listed as age 17.
Oh.
What? Thank maybe you very because you much. Feel like a 17-year-old.
I just think it was the way I signed up.
What place did you finish, though?
It was like it was among 17-year-olds. I was like 187th.
Well, that's pretty good for you.
Well, I think so. Yeah. I'll take that.
Seems like the American Lung Association numbers might have been hacked.
Yeah, there could have been a Russian hacking. Meanwhile, Andrea was in the water at Lake Michigan, and
yes.
$1.5 million raised for Special Olympics.
How about that?
It's tremendous. Great.
I keep telling myself that to make myself feel good about, you know, from all the comments that I'm getting, what? You jumped into the lake?
Well, from our friends Mark Doyle and Kip from Rags of Honor.
Yes.
They were there, and as you start to make your way towards the water to get into the water, at any point did you consider cutting and running?
No, because I was with the Warrior Games Warriors, literally, and they're going, let's take the plunge, let's take the plunge, ooh, 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 and they were jumping, and they said, well, and then they had another slogan too. I probably shouldn't say. This is what they said. They said,
"Go." Oh, go long or deep?
Yeah, that's what they just kept saying. Over
oh, go
and over
long
again.
And deep.
Right into the water because
go
the,
long
the
and
farther
deep.
Out you
go
run,
go long and deep.
Yeah, the farther out you run, you're supposed to just be able to get used to it by the time it gets up to your chest, which you really don't.
Right.
But still, again, $1.5 million for Special Olympics. That's why I warm
what's,
my
what's
heart.
The longest anyone stayed in?
Oh,
spring.
10
through
seconds.
Spring. Yeah, through spring.
It was just, it was a challenge. Just and then if you don't submerge, if you don't go all the way, then you're kind of a wuss. And again, I'm with all the warriors and Doyle and Brendan and everybody, you know, guy who just come back from Iraq.
Is the water murky?
Not really.
Fairly
clean? It's full of sand. It's sandy.
Yeah.
But it's not full of garbage or anything.
Any critters down there going, what the hell are you doing? It's winter.
No, and we were kind of looking forward to the fact that everybody else had gone in ahead of us, and we were hoping that they would warm it up. It didn't really
happen. I don't
happen.
Think it works
no,
that way.
No, it didn't work that way.
Did you see Urlacher?
Yeah, he was grilling brats.
Yeah, why didn't he go in?
Good question. He had a scarf
because he was
and
grilling brats,
he was,
and he didn't yeah, have to.
He was grilling brats, exactly.
Well, nicely done by all of you. David Letterman didn't make it either. David Letterman, though, did a long-form interview with New Yorker magazine. Sandberg, I want you to listen to this. Because you always say that, you know, I go off the deep end with Trump, you know, and there's one or two listeners that have said the same thing. Letterman says if he still hosted The Late Show, all he'd talk about is Trump until, quote, people would have to come and take me off the stage. He addresses a whole bunch of different things, including the current late night landscape. Doesn't spend any time watching late night TV. His beard is scarier than ever. But he tells a great story in it about somebody saw him on the street. And they said, are you on TV? And he said, well, I used to be. And they said, are you David Letterman? He said, yeah. So what happened? He said, I got fired. And the woman looked at him and went, boy, they effed you up. Because he has not only grown out the scraggliest, weirdest beard, he's lost his hair as well. So it's an interesting look. But it's a long-form interview. It's out everywhere today from the New Yorker. And he's advocating for Alec Baldwin to get a Presidential Medal of Freedom for his work.
I don't think this president will give that to him. Perhaps the next one will.
Well, and you were watching Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
And
we had,
Kate McKinnon actually appeared on Saturday Night Live. Is there any character she doesn't do?
Is she not? I mean, you're a comedian. Is she not brilliant?
She is brilliant. She's absolutely brilliant.
They started with the cold open with Forrest Gump, like she was sitting there with her box of chocolates. And
Forrest Gump is Attorney General
Jeff Sessions yeah.
Sitting on a bus. Here's a clip.
Being in the government is so fun. Have you ever been in it?
No, never.
All right. To meet so many nice people like this. This is my best good friend, Kellyanne. She ain't got no legs. I ain't got no legs, Kellyanne. You sure you don't want chocolate? I always say life is like a box of chocolates. Sure are a whole lot of brown ones in there. I was on the cover of the New York Times. You want to see?
This says you might have committed perjury.
Yeah, I had a bad week. So I said, no, I never talked to any Russians ever. And that's all I got to say about that. I talked to the Russians.
It's Kellyanne Conway, or I should say it's Kate McKinnon. And but the funny thing they did with Kellyanne Conway, which was a homage to the picture of Kellyanne Conway with her feet on the couch texting throughout the show, from Weekend Update to various other places in the show. They didn't make any reference to it. It's just Kellyanne Conway was on her knees texting somewhere.
Unbelievable.
That was very funny.
You mean, no matter how you feel, Kate McKinnon is just such a great... She nailed her sessions.
Tremendous.
Perfectly.
Traffic, then we're back. More coming up in just a second from the Polish Museum of America on Kazimierz Pulaski Day. We're going to track down an IRS expert in the next couple of weeks to answer some of your basic tax questions on the air. But I made this part of the Top 6 at 6, which you can hear every morning at 6:05. Six stories that you'll be talking about during the day. The IRS says we're not doing as many audits because we don't have enough people. And all of America went, oh, I'm sorry. So there'll be less audits this year than ever before, which I guess would make you, because you've been audited.
I have been audited. It was terrible.
And And really, four times.
But Adam's
fought, four times.
I was one time, and they send the letter, because, you know, we always say they're not going to call you. They sent the letter, and it was worded like, come sit and have a conversation with us. And when I did call back the
with
number,
your friends at the IRS,
I said, is this an audit? And they said, we don't like to call it that.
That's my sister got that letter this fall. And yeah. She's like, I think I'm being audited. Oh, yeah. I said, how do you think? And, well, it's vaguely.
It is. It makes it sound like I'm going to show up with coffee and they'll have cookies and nothing.
But don't they tell you
coffee
what to,
or cookies.
Don't they tell you what to bring?
They initially, because you go back several times, they say the first time is come in for a conversation. And then they basically tell you, well, you're being audited for this tax year. And I know why, because I'd gotten a big refund. It was the year of the homeowner tax credit. Which
right,
I
and you were stealing money from the government.
No, I wasn't. No, but yeah. That was the red flag. And she said, well, next time you come in, you're going to need to bring in your receipts from the year. And I, as you all know, save everything. So I came in with a box, literally like a legal-sized box, took it out, took out legal pads, took out, and I write everything down to papers. And the woman looked at me and went, oh, my God, you're one of those people.
Well, I would think she'd be happy with that. Because, like, if I got audited, and it's, you know, it's rather remarkable I haven't, but it's because I overpay every year. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like at the airport. I think if I overtip, my bags will definitely get there.
Right.
So I overpay every year. And but if I got audited, I would just have to go, you guys are going to have to come to my house. Yeah, you guys are going to have to come to my car. I don't know where stuff is.
Oh, I don't think they'd like it. No, you would just go, what do I owe you?
Yeah.
Here, let me write you the
give
check.
Give me a number.
Yeah.
Let's come up with a number.
You'd go back and forth like you're buying a car.
No. What are you thinking? What's your, tell me your number. Here, I'll write it down on a napkin. Let me slide this over to you. You tell me if this is your number, and if it's not, we'll meet in the middle.
That's what you would do.
Yeah. How long did the whole process take?
It took about a month, but
wow.
I had to go back a couple. I went back, I think, two or three times. And
my sister's is taking a lot longer because all she has is basically like two receipts from the year she was audited, so it's not looking good.
That's not good.
Credit card.
That's sort of like if you go to O'Hare and you lose your parking ticket, you automatically have to pay the max.
Yeah. Not good.
Engineer Adam here, four times?
Oh, my God.
Four
gosh.
Times. And why are you getting audited over and over again? Freelancer?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, freelancer, yeah.
And it's your business?
Yeah, Adam actually took a home office deduction at my house. That was part of the problem.
Did you have to pay? I mean, every time you had to pay, though. Yeah, me too. I knew I was. You're not going to get out of there without paying something.
I write a big check every year on April 15th because the law says I have to. but it just seems to me that the whole figuring out the withholding thing should be easier. Because when you do the withholding thing, how could they be that far off? You know what I'm saying?
Right. I'm guessing your accountant has told you you're withholding and you just don't implement the withholding.
No, I do. I've changed.
He's changed his ways. But the state of
Illinois. But it still always comes down to the same thing. It's something between this and this, and it's a lot of money.
But the state of Illinois now, of course, because there's no budget, people aren't getting their state refund checks.
Well, Governor Rauner's coming in, so if I just write him a check now, can we just cut through the process?
I don't know. Ask him. That might.
I'm going to save myself some time. No CLTV today because we are live at the Polish Museum of America. They are getting ready for the big celebration here at 10 a.m. We'll come back and do more for the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Something I would say to Andre every day. You smell like meat.
Steve, I'm eating a delicious piece of kielbasa.
Thank you to Kasha's Deli. Find Kasha's products in your local supermarket or visit the deli at 2101 West Chicago Avenue. We've met many of the folks that run the Polish Museum of America. And you're going to do that again right here with the chairman of the board of the Polish American Museum and the president of the Polish Roman Catholic Union, Joseph Drobat.
Drobat.
So close.
Yeah, very close. Very
Joseph,
close.
Nice to meet you.
You want to pronounce it in Polish? It's Drobat.
Yeah, of course it is.
Okay.
As long as your mom's not here to yell at me, I'll be fine.
Fine.
What do you want people to know about the museum?
What is there not to know about the museum? It's a store of history. It's a storybook palace. We have issues here that go back to the 15th, 16th century. We've got artifacts of many of the Polish leaders that were responsible for for helping create the Polish nation that it is right now.
Sure.
If you've had to talk with anyone else, you know that the Paderewski room, we have a special room dedicated to Paderewski.
Sure.
Ignacio Paderewski was a signer of the Treaty of Versailles. Mm-hmm. We have his pen here. He helped orchestrate and create the Polish nation from 1919 through 1939. Along the line, we have many, many scholars of works of books that we have back to the 15th century. We have history with Kosciuszko. We have Kosciuszko's letters. We have Jefferson's letters here when they had dialogue between the two of them after the Revolutionary War.
What would you say the most popular exhibit is, or the thing everybody wants to see when they come?
That's hard to say.
Yeah.
Maybe
that's
Pope.
Very hard
the
to say.
The papal exhibit?
The Pope is here. There's no question about the Pope. We have quite a display of his issues when he was here in Chicago visiting many, many times. Probably if you were to, it would depend on your personality. It would depend on what you want. We have armor here. We have armor from the 16th, 17th century when Jan Sobieski led the troops into Vienna to liberate Vienna.
And it was all hand-to-hand combat.
I don't think I'd want to face the chargers on the horse.
Yeah.
As a cavalryman said.
Unless you had the army. What is the significance of all of the flags that are lined up, too, all around?
Just about every Polish organization would have a banner representing themselves, representing their saint that they had, the society that they belonged to, or it would also be banners of chargers of war memorial. As they led into battle, they would have their own standard that they would be charging with.
Well, today being a very big day, Kazimierz Pulaski Day, but what are the other highlight days that people generally flood your place?
Well, we have...
We had the anniversary recently.
We had an 80th anniversary. We had an 80th anniversary of the opening of the museum. The museum was actually founded by the Polish Roman Catholic Union in 1935. It was a very foresightful event for the individuals there because it became a repository of the events from 1939. I'm sure people have mentioned to you that when the German Nazis invaded Poland, at the time there was a national exposition going on in New York City.
Yes.
Where Poland had a very large, large pavilion. We were very, very fortunate because of that event, unfortunate for the Polish people, but we were a repository of many of the artifacts. This beautiful mosaic that's behind me, the stained glass, that was the major exhibit in the pavilion. That time.
There's been movies made about it. We've talked about the fact that the Nazis and the horrific crimes that they committed, but they also stole a lot of artifacts. And,
no question about it.
Artifacts stolen from the Polish people, have they been somewhat recovered?
No. Some of the major artifacts are still not recovered from the individuals' homes and possessions. Some of the more important things, I believe, issues by, if I'm not mistaken, not Raphael, but Michelangelo or Da Vinci. One or two of those items are gone. I think it's a lady with the ermine, if I'm not mistaken,
okay.
is something that's still missing. It's never been repossessed, never been found. There are many, many items that are still gone.
Sure.
We mentioned the papal exhibit, which is beautiful and has photographs of the last time that Pope John Paul was here in 1979. I asked your colleague this earlier, would there be any effort on behalf of the museum to try to bring Pope Francis back to Chicago?
I'm sure that Pope Francis, during his term as Pope of the Church, will be in Chicago. It's impossible for him not to come to Chicago with the amount of Polish,
sure.
Catholic, Italian, Irish Catholics here.
Has the Cardinal been over yet?
Not yet.
Okay,
he has been invited.
Over.
He has been invited.
I'm sure he is.
And he's still experiencing... culture shock by moving into Chicago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because he was a nice guy from Denver, and now he's in a big city.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think he's from Washington, isn't he?
Was he Washington State originally?
Spokane or,
spent some time
or somewhere, I believe.
Well, it's great to have you here, and your people are all wonderful, and thank you for hosting us.
Well, we're very welcome. We're very pleased that you were here.
Thank you.
Enjoy Kasia's food.
Yeah, and how about this guy's voice, huh?
I know, right?
Yes. Or Ann Samuelson just called, said he sounds better than I do. It's quite a voice you have. What do you do when you're not doing this?
What am I doing? I'm not doing this. I'm running the organization, running the Polish Roman Catholic
Union. There you
Union.
Go.
Yes.
That's all you need to know.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
You're very welcome.
Let's take a break. We'll come back.
Thank
and
you.
I believe the Consul General will join us in just a second on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
918, we continue. Again, live from the Polish Museum of America, sponsored by Allstate Chicago's Own Good Hands. The linkage between Poland and Chicago governmentally is the Consul General's office. And the Consul General for the Republic of Poland joins us now. I'm going to try. You ready?
I'm ready.
Piotr Zieliński.
Well, not even close.
You only had 40 more minutes.
Not even
anything
close.
That ends with well isn't good, or starts with well. What is the name?
My name is Piotr Janicki.
And you're surprised that I missed?
The tip is, the less you think about it, the easier it is for you to pronounce it.
What do other fools call you that can't pronounce your name?
Well, I mean, I go by Piotr Janicki here sometimes.
So you won't be offended if I call
you
Peter.
I'm getting used to it.
Yes.
I'm starting to react.
You deserve to have your name pronounced correctly, but I'm telling you, you're working with me.
All right. That's fine.
All right. So let's talk about your country, and let's talk about this country. And how would you sum up the relations at this point with the tumult that's in Washington?
Well, I think we are doing okay, more than okay, because okay in the diplomatic term is bad, but more than okay is good. I think our relationship is strong, and I think our ties are also very, very good. And Polish people love Americans. If you're ever in Poland, and if you say I'm American, you're going to be greeted with warm smile.
Sure.
And we don't smile very often.
Well, it's still cold.
Yes. Well, but needless to say, the image of Americans in Poland is very good, and the relationships are strong.
The Consul General's office here, I would think there's, I don't know if pressure is the right word, but there's more, I suppose, expected because of the large Polish community that's here. It really is an important, very important position. With the families and the Polish community here. I don't know what the equivalent would be. You know, Italians in New York, Polish
Maybe.
Folks in Chicago.
Maybe. Well, there are a lot of Polish Americans living here. We issue over 120,000 passports every 10 years, so 12,000 every year, mm-hmm. Which is a huge number. And these are just Polish citizens, but a lot of Polish Americans do not have a valid Polish passport. We estimate that there are over 800,000 Polish Americans living in a metropolitan area here in Chicago. So a lot of people tell me, you know, I'm Polish. Even though, you know, their grandma or grandma was Polish, they still consider themselves Polish Americans.
Sure, sure, sure.
And the community has grown. The Polish community over the years has grown. We know the Taste of Polonia, which is over Labor Day, but now there's the Polish Film Festival every fall as well.
Yes. I mean, the community is big, but it's not growing. Unfortunately, it's not growing because a lot of Polish people decide to stay in Poland. It's a wonderful country, so I don't blame them. They want to stay where they are. The newest immigration is from 80s and 90s, early 90s. But Polish people came here in large numbers in 60s and 70s, but not anymore. Not anymore. They'd rather stay in Europe.
What's the greatest pressures back home on the government and on the system that represents Poland?
Can you repeat this question, please?
The greatest pressures that you have back home for Poland to continue to thrive. You know, you've got a lot of pressure with Germany next door, with refugees and political climate. Germany and France supposedly both being influenced by Russia, the same way that Russia may have hacked our election. Are there concerns with President Duda and others amongst that, the Russian influence?
Yes, it is. Poland is a member of NATO alliance, and we feel secure contributing over 2% of our GDP to our military
expenses.
By
the way, one of only a few that does pay the bill.
That's correct.
Yes.
That's correct. So we are an example for other states that do not do that. So security is a big challenge for entire Eastern Europe and Central Europe as well. So we're building a strong relationships with our neighbors, with the United States, to make sure that in case something happens, we will be protected. But we are paying 2% of our GDP towards our military, and it's our insurance policy, and premiums are high.
Yes, yes, very much so. As you go forward, this building is a great monument to the Polish community here, but do you have anything else you wanted to let the greater Chicago population know about the fact that the Polish Americans are a huge part of Chicago and have been and always will be a thriving part of the community?
Well, the contribution of the Polish people to the Chicago area is huge. You can see it almost everywhere, looking at the old Polish churches, looking at the businesses that are here in Chicago. So the contribution is great, and I hope that Americans appreciate that contribution.
It's great to have you here. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you, sir.
Are you staying for the ceremony?
Of course I am.
Yes. And is it appropriate to say Happy Kashmir Pulaski Day? Is that the right terminology?
I really don't know what's appropriate or not, you know. But if you say happy, I think it is a
it
reason
right.
to be happy.
Yes. Yeah, it seems right.
Yeah. And eventually, he died for the freedom of America.
Right.
But what he did makes us happy.
And finally, one more time, I'd like to thank our guest, who will now pronounce his own name so that I don't disrespect him unintentionally again. And that name is?
Piotr Janicki.
See, your mom would be very proud. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
In a moment coming up on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
That's Allstate, Stan. Are you in good hands?
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
We continue from the Polish Museum of America, Steve Cochran Show, and crowd filling in here for the event they're having this morning into this afternoon on Kashmir Pulaski Day. And Congressman Quigley will be here. Senator Durbin will be here. They've already been on the show. Governor Rauner is going to be here as well. I just ran into State Treasurer Mike Frericks.
Mm-hmm.
He may drop by before 10 if we have a minute.
Did you guys solve all the state's problems?
Yeah.
We're going to have a budget by the end of the day?
Yeah. I just said, can you get this done?
Yeah.
And it turns out no one had asked him before.
That's all we had to do, huh?
But thanks to our friends at Allstate, we want to say hi to Agent Adam Rasney, who is an Allstate agency owner for 6 years. He's in Elk Grove Village, and he made the trek for us today, and we appreciate it. Nice to see Adam.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
How'd you get into Allstate?
By a chance? No.
Yeah. Well, what made you decide this is what I want to try?
Well, I wanted to work with people. That was something that I've always wanted. And Allstate gave me an opportunity to open my own agency. And it's been fun.
Is it a life you'd recommend for others?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And you know, if you go to Allstate.com, it's one of the rare businesses where you can go find out about being your own agent. I mean, they're always actively recruiting, right?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Now, I know you like to give back. We're going to meet one of those folks in just a second. But tell me about your agency.
Well, we've been there for about 6 years, and it's growing. It's a lot of fun, but at the same time, it could be challenging.
Sure.
Working with people, finding out exactly what their needs, what the risk is, and coming up with a solution,
a plan that works,
insurance policy that actually covers what the risk is requiring.
Speaking of risk, Andrea is a very dangerous driver. I think she needs more comprehensive in collision.
I'm not so much, Adam. Not so much. But I do want to ask you, a lot of people affected by the tornadoes last week as well. If people have questions, can they call you?
Of course.
With what kind of coverage they might need?
I would say call as soon as possible. The sooner you talk to your agency, your agent, we can open up a claim and start rebuilding a life. That's important.
Tell me about your family.
Well, I was born in Poland, so,
This is kind of a natural tie, isn't it?
I would say so. I'm married for the past 32 years. I have a son and a daughter. We all live in the Chicagoland area, so it's definitely our home.
What do the kids do?
My son actually works with me.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Teaching him the business.
Got to do something, right?
Right, and your daughter?
And my daughter works with my wife in a beauty salon. So
wow,
it's sort of a family type of a
tight family unit.
We keep a close eye on them.
Well, I'm sure they're great kids. On the phone is Lori Cornino. She is a founding member of Celebrating All Things That Is Feminine. Well, how did you tie into this charity?
Well, you know what?
Dad and daughter kind of thing?
Kind of about wife, daughter, come with us type of a deal. And yeah. Once I saw what they do, why they do it, so I got hooked.
Lori, how are you?
How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for being on. Tell me what your organization does.
We raise money to support other charities where we've been up for 6 years now. We've raised over $130,000, and we throw two events a year, and we but donate to other charities to help women in need. And Adam, actually, Helena and Jesse work for me, Lorraine. And Kara Sturmack started this CAD up, and she invited us to join them. So we started doing these fundraisers, and Adam has been so supportive of it through Allstate, so we thank you very much for the opportunity.
So are these women in crisis or women transitioning, or how would you describe it?
Women in crisis and children in need. A lot of them have been homeless and some abusive situations. So we've supported things like PhD, which helps the family side. We've supported WINGS, many organizations. We do a lot with Peloton Opportunity Center, which helps a lot of the community for people who are trans. They need community services because they can't have it on their own. We also do a baby shower every year, which is what Adam is helping us with now. And for the Jesse Brown veterans, the female veterans, they have unique needs. So we CAD have created a fund several years ago, and we replenish that each year. And Adam has been so kind to work with us to donate $1,000 for us to help with the baby shower, which every June we collect up for 50 diaper bags. We need diaper bags and swaddles and blankets and clothing.
It's very nice.
Lori, in addition to the two events that you have this year, specifically the baby shower, expand on your mantra, too. One of your goals on your website, it's a group of professional women who believe in paying it forward.
We are a nonprofit, so we don't keep anything. Everything we do is to help other organizations, to help other people. So it's just something we do to help the community. And we usually try to stick to the pellets, to our general community, to help, because then we get volunteers from the different organizations, too, that help run our events. So it gets people involved, and I think it's been really good. We've made a lot of great contacts and great connections.
Well, your friend Adam Razney is here, and Adam, you have a check to present. By the way, Lori, this is one of these big checks. Don't try to cash this. Don't put it in your purse.
I can't wait.
And Adam, how much is the check for?
Well, I'm honored to present a $1,000 check to celebrate All That's Feminine on behalf of Allstate Foundation and my agency to further their work in the community.
That's a great baby shower gift.
Yeah, you're a good husband and a good dad.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you.
Pleasure.
And Lori, please keep up the good work. Let us know what you're up to. We're happy to help you publicize it.
Wonderful. Thank you for your help.
All right, you hold on. 9:43. And Adam, thanks to you.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody at Allstate. We'll be back in the Allstate Showcase Studio tomorrow. But first, more coming up here at the Polish Museum of America on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
9:50. Getting busy in here now. State Treasurer Mike Frericks is here. And what brings you to the neighborhood, Treasurer? Whoop, got to get that microphone on. Pop that button for him there, will you? Oh, there we go. All
How right, about now?
You're good to go. What brings you to the neighborhood?
I'm learning here.
That's fine.
Well, we're celebrating Casimir Pulaski today here in Chicago and throughout the state of Illinois. A great hero, an immigrant to our country.
So, Frericks, have you done your 23andMe DNA check on this? What is the derivation?
I haven't looked at the DNA, but from northwestern Germany, near the Dutch border. Anyone who's been to Holland realizes they're tall people, and they can probably see where I got my DNA.
And are you the tallest treasurer in America?
I am, although for some reason treasurers tend to be taller. We just had a National Association of State Treasurers, and there are five of us over 6'5".
And you are 6'6"?
About 6'8".
6'8". Did you play basketball?
I did. Unfortunately, I was the second shortest guy on our team in high school. Everyone wonders if it was a team of giants, and I tell them no, unfortunately.
You played for Easter Island High?
It was a late growth spurt. I was literally second shortest guy on my team my sophomore year. By senior year, I would have been the tallest.
Well, you got in a few games.
I got in at a few games, which is the problem, so I didn't go out my junior year. I played rec league, put a team together where I'd get more minutes, and that's when I started to grow.
How's your basketball skill serving you in Springfield? Because it doesn't seem like there's a lot going on governmentally, so you have time to shoot a little.
You know, in the lane, there's in the game, there's a lot of pushing around, and sharp elbows are really helpful. And I find in Springfield, some of those same skills are needed.
Seems perfect. The governor's going to drop by in just a second, but before he does, I wanted to take your temperature on where we are.
Well, we're without a budget. It's been basically 2 years without a budget. It is unprecedented. It is a problem. People ask me, how do you like your job? I tell them I love it, and they look at me like I'm crazy.
By the way, explain your job, because the comptroller does what and the treasurer does what?
Yeah, the comptroller writes the checks. The comptroller is the one who tells
treasurer
all these vendors
the money.
No. We invest the money. We have money to invest. We have over 700 different state funds. We invest about $12 billion, and we give people the tools they need to invest in themselves through our Bright Start, Bright Directions College Savings Programs, and a brand new program to help families with children with disabilities save to give their kids a brighter future.
Treasurer, we've been kind of at this D-Day scenario. We haven't had a balanced budget in almost 2 years now. At what point will the ball break? At what point are we heading toward bankruptcy?
You know, money still continues to come in. The backlog of bills grows, though. But at some point, you reach a tipping point where people say, I don't see any improvement in sight. I don't have any ability to plan. I have to abandon my plans.
And when you approach folks about investments, or maybe you have a creative idea out of the box, are they reluctant because Illinois has gained a bad reputation?
Yeah. We have a new program. It's going to help families save for their children with disabilities. And we've run into people who say, I don't trust giving my money to the state of Illinois. And we have to count this and say, we're working with the private sector. These are funds that can't be swept. But they're going to really improve the lives of some of our most vulnerable people in the state. It's a great program. We did it by working together with 14 other states. By doing that, our fees for this program are lower than any other state in the country. When you work together with people, and it's not just states that agree with us, it's not all blue states, it's an equal number of red and blue states, we focused on what we had in common, and that was the ability to help people. And we were able to do something really, really revolutionary.
And how about state income tax refunds? Are they going out?
Well, so the comptroller is the one who writes the checks. I think they're delayed, like a lot of other state payments out there. And at some point, people give up. And so, you know, people ask me, what do you think about the next election? I said, next election, we have problems right in front of us. There will be plenty of time for campaigning. I mean, we're over a year and a half away from next election. There's plenty of time to campaign. Let's focus on the governing now.
This is the highest office you've attained so far. You're turned off at all by the process?
No, I'm hopeful because I look, you know, we came in through all this problem. We set up a new program, ABLE. We came in with our college savings account and we renegotiated fees, reduced fees families are paying on our Bright Directions program by 57%. The state treasurer's office received, you might find it hard to believe, a credit upgrade. You probably haven't heard the words Illinois and credit upgrade uttered in the same sentence a long time.
We're going to have to fact check you.
check with Morningstar rating agencies. Right. We did that because we came in and we negotiated lowered fees, and we got an upgrade. That's what happens when you sit down and negotiate and listen to someone across the table and actually have a goal to move the ball forward. I could have scored a lot of political points traveling around the state beating up on the bank that didn't want to lower fees.
Yeah,
but it
no
wouldn't
upside.
wouldn't have done anything to help the people of the state. So we sat down, we negotiated, we listened, and had a real improvement.
I know you got to get ready for this program, but I thank you for being here. Also, thank you for being open-minded and not playing partisan politics, because we need you to do that in the position you're in.
See, thank you very much. And, you know, I remind you, some of your listeners here, the reason that Casimir Pulaski came to this country was basically Russian aggression into Poland. And it was part of an uprising. He came back and let that be a lesson to Americans today. But
irony.
I don't think a lot has changed.
Irony's ironic, isn't it?
Yes.
Website, IllinoisTreasurer.gov.
IllinoisTreasurer.gov. They can look there for unclaimed property. They can look there for college savings or this new ABLE program. We give people the tools to invest in themselves and encourage them to check out IllinoisTreasurer.gov.
Thank you, sir.
Steve, thank you.
I want to say hi also to the Chief Judge for the State of Illinois Circuit Court of Cook County, Timothy Evans.
And an Illini as well.
Mr. Evans is an Illini?
Fellow Illini, yes, he is. On top of all of his other duties.
Hey, Judge Evans, we want to say a quick hi. Welcome as well.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and particularly on an occasion like this, we celebrate an American and Polish hero who stood up to the Russians.
That's right.
And that's prevalent today. That's certainly true. We have people who are protecting the rights of citizens from Polish ancestry on the Circuit Court of Cook County as well. And so we embrace that enthusiastically.
And we need all branches to support other branches, and we need the judicial branch to be endorsed,
yes,
to be fortified, and to be supported by the executive branch.
I love that combination. Thank you.
Yes.
I love it.
Great
thanks
to see you, Judge.
Good to be
thanks
here.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
I want to take a second here to thank the people that brought us out here for the Polish American Museum festivities today. I think the governor may stop by, but we're getting a little tight on time here.
Oh, the dignitaries are starting to file in, too, as we speak. Governor Rauner is walking in right now.
So we'll let him get to a microphone. But I want to thank Ben and also, of course, obviously Mike Jacobson and everybody else I may or may not be forgetting back at the studio. But the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour from the Polish Museum has been presented by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands. And also want to thank Kasia's Deli and Allstate agent Adam Razny. Senator Durbin is across the room as well. And I got just a couple of minutes before the festivities start with Governor Rauner, who is saddling up. Throw those headphones on, Governor, if you would.
Do I put on these earmuffs?
Yeah, put them on. Put
yeah,
on
you
your
can
earmuffs.
Put those on, yeah. There he is.
Governor Rauner joins us now. Go ahead. Feel free to put those on, Governor. There you go. Governor Rauner joins us now. How are you?
Good morning. Happy Pulaski Day.
And happy Pulaski Day to you. First off, can we get you a sandwich? How much weight have you lost?
I mean, you know what? Running around the state of Illinois, I love everything about it. It's all good.
Stress.
Last week, I had a lot of Pounchkeys. Okay. I've been eating a lot, and a lot of Pounchkeys really helped last week.
All right, so it's not stress. It's not budget stress. It's keeping you from gaining weight.
It's loving to work hard for the people of Illinois.
All right, let's talk about the Polish community for a second and why this means a lot to you.
Oh, it's a big deal. You know, we have one of the most wonderful, vibrant, largest Polish-American communities anywhere in the United States. Awesome leaders in every walk of life, in the arts and culture and education and science and law and business. And the Polish-American community is so proud of our strong relationship and our partnership between America and the people of Poland. And today we get to celebrate one of the greatest American heroes, a true American hero, who was born in Poland but fought for the United States back when we were just trying to get our independence from Britain. He fought for freedom and independence and democracy, and he was killed during the Revolutionary War, and today we honor his legacy.
And you know who else he fought against? Russian aggression, huh? You talk about ripped from the headlines.
Exactly right. Well, President General George Washington back then promoted him. You know, he's the Pulaski's the father of the American cavalry.
Right.
And he gave him full military honors in his burial, and he's a true American hero. That's why it's such a wonderful day to celebrate.
I know you've got to get up there, so before you go, give me 30 seconds on the budget. You're hopeful of a grand bargain? You don't know.
I am absolutely hopeful. We just got to stay persistent, keep negotiating, trying to compromise. We'll get something done that's good for the people of Illinois.
And as soon as it's done, you'll call me first.
We'll look forward to talking to you about it.
All right, thank you.
All right. Happy Pulaski Day.
And happy Pulaski Day to you.